I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Shep Hyken. Shep is a customer service expert. He is a professional speaker and best-selling author, working with companies and organizations who want to build loyal relationships with their customers and employees. Shep is the author of Moments of Magic, The Loyal Customer, The Cult of the Customer, and The Amazement Revolution. His latest book is Amaze Every Customer Every Time. Shep is the creator of the Customer Focus Program, which helps clients develop a customer service culture and loyalty mindset. Shep, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Well, it is a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And it was so great that I got to hear you at the National Speakers Bureau and got to hear a little bit about what you do and hear you in person before having the opportunity to interview on this show.
Well, it's great. You know, I love the meeting that we met at was the New York chapter. There's chapters all over the country. The National Speakers Association is the premier association for anybody involved in professional speaking, and that includes people like you that are doing these types of podcasts and radio shows.
So how did you get into speaking, and also from either from there or parallel to there, how did you get into customer service?
Sure. Well, I can go all the way back to the time I was a kid. Let's go there, because I was about 10 years old. I started doing magic tricks, and at age 12, I did my first birthday party magic show. And I had a rough audience. It was about 26-year-olds. Not 26, but 26-year-old kids, about 20 of them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. And that's about as rough an audience as I might have ever had in my career as a speaker as well. But no, these kids were great. At the end of the show, I went home. My mom, you know, drove me back and forth, obviously. I was 12 years old. And she asked me, what am I going to do after dinner? And I knew exactly what she was getting at. I said, I'll write a thank you note. She says, exactly. When I was a little kid, my parents taught me what to do when somebody did something nice, which is like write that note. Today we might email, we might make a phone call, whatever. But the idea was show appreciation. And I started to do more magic shows. My parents taught me, you know, make sure you call ahead, let them know that you remember that, you know, 2 weeks in advance that we're going to, you know, have this party and where it is. I know exactly how to get there, that kind of thing. And I'm creating confidence. And when I'm finished, I write the thank you note. Then my dad said, follow up, make sure you did a good job. So a week later, I'd make a phone call. It's called feedback. Little did I know. And by the way, when I made that feedback call, I would ask, you know, hey, was there a sibling, you know, a brother or sister that this kid had that needs a magic show, or anybody in the, you know, of the parents that were in the back I should contact about their kids? I built a pretty good business at age, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, all the way till I graduated high school. So there's two things that happened. Number one, I got my dose of customer service. My parents taught it to me. It wasn't even for what I knew called customer service back then. It was just doing the right thing. And the second thing was I was up in front of people all the time. And by the way, when I was age 14, I worked at my first nightclub, and I was doing work in nightclubs, doing comedy and magic in my, you know, later in my high school years as well as in my college years. So I had performance experience. When I graduated college, I didn't have, well, actually I had a job, but the company sold within a very short period of time. So within a year, I didn't have a job. And I said, what could I do? I saw a couple of motivational speakers and I said, that's what I can do. I have the entertainment background, so I knew I could get up in front of people. I was creative in that sense. I could create content. And I had a little business background. I had, you know, a little bit of a working career, even though it was very short. I'd worked with this company actually through college. And I also went to college. So I started to write this speech. And within a very short period of time, I found a couple of articles and a book about customer service. And I said, this is exactly what I was taught when I was a kid. I love this. And that's how it all started.
Isn't it so great when things come together?
Right. And I feel I'm one of the lucky ones because, I mean, a number of people do, and I hang around these types of people, a number of people do what they love, what they're passionate about, things that they've done all of their lives. I know people, and they're friends of mine, and I have nothing against this, but they work in a business. And I said, so how did you get there? And they said, well, when I got out of college, I interviewed and I took a good job that was offered to me. I go, is this what you wanted to do? And they said, I didn't know what I wanted to do. Now, they enjoy themselves? Sure, they enjoy themselves. But I'm lucky because I basically do what I did as a kid. I get up in front of people, I present. Now, I do it at a much deeper, more serious and sophisticated level. But really, at the end of the day, I'm still writing, I'm creating content or entertainment, if that's what you want to call it back then. But today, it's content. And I'm essentially doing the same thing. I'm just doing it as a big boy.
Given your story, what do you think is different about starting a business like yours in 2015 compared to however many years ago it was when you started yours?
Well, I tell people this all the time. I started in 1983, so that's 32 years ago. If the internet were available, if social media were available, I would be 5-10 times further along in my career than I am today. I think I would have it would have been easier to get business. It would have been far less expensive. Back when I started, you know, to get into the business, you didn't need a lot, and that's still the case today, but it costs more money. You did need a brochure. You did need a physical video. Back then, it was an actual VHS tape that you can send. It cost $1,000 a minute to create a nice video. The average videos that I created were 10 to 12 minutes long. Today, on your iPhone that you carry in your pocket, you can get just as good a quality.
And if not better.
I know, if not better. And the software that's available that comes on your computer is as sophisticated as some of these recording studios had that cost literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, the brochure is now your web page, so you don't even need to have one of those printed. Just, you know, pay somebody a reasonable amount of money. In some cases, I actually use a company, Ford Sakes' company, Prime Concepts. It's a little bit more expensive, but I get what I pay for. But anybody can get into this business with a cell phone, a website, and a business card. And of course, you can go up from there. There's probably 35, 40,000 speakers out there, according to the industry statistics, and depending upon the ones you look at, that get paid to speak. Now, that doesn't mean they're full-time professionals. They could be authors that are occasionally paid, sports celebrities that are paid. But as far as true professional speakers in our association today, with our what we call our academy members, which are the ones that are basically almost professional from the level where they are, and many of them actually are, they've just chosen to stay in the academy. There's about 3,500. Back when I first started, there was probably, or when I, yeah, 400 or 500 members of the professional, you know, National Speakers Association, maybe a few more. But I remember my first convention, there was only maybe 400 or 500 people. Today, there's 2,000 that attend the conventions.
Given the fact that it's probably easier than it's ever been to start a business, especially when the business can benefit from content creation. But on the flip side, there's maybe more possibilities for competition than ever before. How can you leverage customer service into a tool that will help your business grow and thrive and smash the plateau?
Well, and that's any business. By the way, even content creation for a hardware store chain is just as appropriate as content creation for a professional speaker or somebody that aspires or claims to be a thought leader.
I agree.
So it's a value-added proposition to give somebody and showcase your content. But customer service is definitely a differentiator. Everybody has customer service. Everybody provides a level of customer service. The question is it a good level or not so good level? And we need to use service. And I use the word service loosely. Customer service can now be tied in with customer experience, the total experience that customer has when they buy anything from you, whether it be a product or service. It's the experience that they have. Is it going to be a positive experience? And most important, is it going to be predictable? In other words, if you do business with me a second or a third time, are you going to get that same level of service to the point where when you walk away as a customer, you go, you know, I like dealing with them. I always can get this. They always treat me right. And the goal is to be better than average all of the time. Now, initially, you got to prove yourself. And once you prove yourself and that customer is confident that it's going to happen again and again, you start to create some sense of loyalty with them. So service becomes really important no matter what your business is.
Interesting. So what are some tips that people who are in business can take from your own experience dealing with these issues?
Well, the first and foremost is everybody thinks, oh, customer service, come on. I have somebody in the customer service department. I have somebody that takes the calls and deals with the support. And my feeling is customer service is not a department. It's a philosophy. And it's a philosophy that needs to be embraced by every single person within an organization. So even if you're a solopreneur, well, then you get to do it all. But if you have two or three or five people, great, small business. If you've got 50,000 people, it's just bigger. And what's happening is how people are treated internally. And that's why I believe everybody has a customer, be it an outside customer that they sell to, or is it an internal customer that they work with, that the company, you know, they're your colleagues, they're your employees. And if you treat the people properly internally, in turn, they will most likely treat people the same way, maybe even better. So I have this thing I call the employee golden rule, which is to treat your people that you work with or your employees the way you want your customers treated, and maybe try to treat them even better. Because you want to showcase and demonstrate the way the customer is supposed to be treated. And the best leaders of any size company recognize that, and they try to create a fulfilling environment that gets employees engaged and want to go to the mat for their company and hopefully do great things for their customer.
So what you're talking about is creating a culture around excellent service.
A culture is a great way to define it. I call it a customer-focused culture.
Very nice, very nice. And is that tied into the company's brand promise?
Well, sometimes it is. If you look at certain taglines of companies, and don't confuse the tagline with the brand promise, but a good tagline that might, you know, share with you what the company's philosophy is, that's great. I actually talk about something called a mantra. Just like, you know, like a mantra is that one word or maybe it's that one sentence phrase that defines what a company is. And my favorite is what the Ritz-Carlton has offered up. Now, they call it their credo, and it is simply nine words. And it goes like this: we're ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And as soon as you come to work, you get it. And if you're a guest of the Ritz-Carlton, you get it as well. You understand it. You know exactly what they are trying to achieve. And a brand is really a promise delivered. And so the brand promise is that, you know, we're ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Are we going to deliver on that promise?
Are there ways that you can also abuse a customer?
Well, sure there are. I see it happening all the time. I wrote an article recently that I can't remember if I titled it this or if it was just themed, that the most abused customer is the sold customer. You know, it's just like so many people in personal relationships. As soon as they get to know somebody and they start to get to know somebody, you know, it's exciting. And then, you know, it's that honeymoon period, if you will. It wears off and then you see the real personalities come through. Well, in business, a lot of times when somebody's trying to sell someone, they do anything they can to sell them. And once they, as they say, close the deal, that's when, in my mind, the relationship officially begins. But in some companies, unfortunately, that's where the positive, great things that happen start to end. And, you know, there's an old joke, and I don't need to tell you the joke, but the punchline was, yesterday you were a prospect, today you're a customer. You know, like, why were you treating me so well yesterday and you're not treating me well anymore? Well, that's a shame that the abused customer happens to be the sold customer. It should be that, hey, we want to tell you who we are and we want to treat you right. And when you decide you want to do business with us, what you see is what you get. Nothing's going to change, because if you love us now, you're going to especially love us after we start working with you.
But also, if you as a customer have the confidence that the leadership of the company is going to respond and do everything they can to make your experience as positive as possible, I think that goes a long way.
Well, I think what happens is this: nobody's perfect, and it's not if you are ever going to have a problem, it's when. And that customer, when they bring it to your attention, is hoping that you're going to do right. And so this is what you want people to say. And I kind of feel like at that moment, it's like judgment time, or it's judgment day. Is it worth, you know, you could be doing business with somebody for 20 years and all of a sudden there's finally a problem. And that moment is, hey, do you earn the right to do another 20 years with that customer? But what you want that customer to say is, you know, I love working with them. I know that even when there's a problem, I can always depend on them taking care of me, because there are going to be problems. And I think it's important. We want the customer to complain. We want them to demand of us, because it gives us the opportunity to fix what needs to be fixed, restore confidence, and continuously do a great job for them.
Yeah, no, you're so right. Shep, you've been in business for a long time. What questions do you wish you had answered when you hit a plateau?
Wow. So I think that what happened early in my career, I mean, I know I hit a number of failures. I was lucky. I'm a motivated person. I read a lot of books. I recognized that failures will happen. But I think the best advice that people gave me, my mentor, Bud Dietrich, who just recently passed away, he was 92 years old. Bud said, you need to treat this, at least for my job, he says, treat this job like it's a sales job. And 40 hours a week, you need to be talking to people about what you do and having them hire you. I had no idea how hard that was going to be. I was only 23 years old. I'd never made a sales call in my life. Thanks to reading books and listening to, back then it was audio cassette tapes, but I listened to those tapes, and whenever there was an obstacle in the way, I always was able to overcome it just by having the right attitude, by looking for other solutions. I'm a creative guy. I like to see what's around the corner. If there's a wall in front of me, I know there's something on the other side. I'm not going to assume there's not.
Shep, when looking for a solution to a problem, small businesses are often tempted to select the cheaper option. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, cheaper doesn't always work. And let me give you an example, and I'll talk about one of my clients. It's Ace Hardware, a hardware store chain, and I think I mentioned them earlier. A hardware store chain is an amazing example because Ace goes up against the biggest competition with these big, huge Home Depots and Lowe's and these big box stores. And the box stores typically have lower prices. They have a bigger selection sometimes. But if you go into an Ace store, you know, you're going to at least get a competitive price, but it's not the cheapest. And those are the words you use, the cheapest price. However, what you get is expertise. And I'm not saying you can't get that at the others, but I think that Ace does a phenomenal job of making sure that their associates are trained well. So if I go in with a project, I may end up spending a tiny little bit more money, but I'm going to walk out knowing that I have everything I need for the project, everything. So I'm not going to have to go back. Maybe I'm even going to get some instruction on how to do it. You know, if I have a leaky faucet and I go in, they're going to help me figure out how to get this fixed. So I'm paying a little bit more, but I'm getting what I pay for. You know, there's that old expression, you get what you pay for. And I think it's 100% true. Cheap doesn't always, cheap sometimes is the right price. You know, the lowest price sometimes is the right price. But if you really want value and you need support, take a look at what the entire package is before you decide to act on price alone.
Yeah, and the truth is, in today's world, every business is competing with their competitors all over the world. It's not just competing with a neighbor in the same, you know, in your backyard. So you do need to be able to differentiate yourself, and value is a place where you can do it.
Yeah, and it's very easy for someone to say, okay, what's the price? You know, I'm going to go online and check on the internet and see if I can get a lower price. Well, you know, you might be able to get a lower price, but are you going to get the expertise and the support that you need?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. So Shep, in your own business, how do you balance developing new business with producing the work that generates revenue?
So the big issue in my particular business is if you're really, really busy, you don't have time to go out there and market and sell. That's traditional in my industry. And the reason it is because most of the people in my industry are solopreneurs. They're working by themselves. So when they're out working with clients, they aren't on the phone talking to potential clients. I think the key is to recognize, hey, it isn't that expensive to have somebody in the office supporting you. And most likely, if you are at all even right even toward the beginning, once you start making a decent living, having somebody to support you and keep the marketing going is very important. Now, how do I personally do it? I do a lot of writing, and I get that writing published, and by being out there in the marketplace seen, either in a published article or even my own blogs, and I actually do a lot of video, I think that's my marketing machine. So I don't necessarily have to be on the phone all day long like I used to in the beginning. By the way, once again, the internet, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the show. The internet creates a great opportunity for us to exploit our expertise to the world, where before, the most people that I could reach would be however many people I wanted to send a mailing to in a bulk mail type of program. So I think we've got a tremendous opportunity. And by the way, I emphasize this, even though I'm a speaker and an author, this is good information for virtually any type of business.
Talk to me more about that.
Well, content marketing is what I'm referring to. I put my content out there. On Monday, I have a blog post that recognizes my favorite blogs and articles that I read the prior week. On Tuesdays, I shoot a video, and it's usually a video based on a blog that I just wrote. On Wednesdays, I actually post the blog. On Thursdays, I have an article that comes out in Forbes. On Friday, I do a guest post, and throughout the whole week, I'm tweeting and Facebooking and doing all these social media things. Well, any company can create a content marketing campaign. Content marketing is phenomenal because it's totally value add. If, by the way, companies confuse content marketing with a blatant sales pitch in the content, they will lose more than win. But if you put good value out there, there's great companies out there that are posting videos on how to best use their products, how to get the most from their products, different ways that customers are using their products. It has nothing to do with them actually blatantly selling you. It's showcasing the value you get and the different ways to use whatever it is that they're selling. And it doesn't matter if they're selling speaking and training services like our company does, or maybe it's an automobile. You know, here's some even the best way to wax your car. Back to the hardware store. How about videos on how to lay a floor, how to lay tile, how to build a deck, how to fix a faucet, how to wire, a basic light switch or whatever. Those are the types of things that companies are putting out there to provide value to their customers. Another great example, the Hilton Hotel down in Dallas, and I actually use this example, Jay Baer, who's a great, great internet guru, a media guru. He had an example, and I used it in one of my articles, and I gave him credit. He was down in Dallas, and I believe he was watching a Twitter conversation where a customer or Twitter just said, hey, I need a good recommendation for a restaurant. And I believe it was the Hilton Hotel chain that came on and said, I know exactly where you are. Here's three good restaurants within walking distance. And by the way, if you want to eat at our restaurant, you're welcome to do that as well. But they recommended the competition. They actually provided content, helpful content, rather than just blatantly promote only themselves.
That is such a great example. Debbie Allen, who was an earlier guest on Smashing the Plateau, who's the expert of experts, talks about how everybody has expertise, and when you share your expertise with the world, good things happen.
Right. And the more you give, the more you get. It's the law of abundance and the law of reciprocity working together.
Shep, what do you think prevents people from making the changes they need for their companies to thrive?
I think it's simply a mindset. I think two things are happening. If it's, depending upon the size of the company, if it's a large company, I believe it's leadership that creates a culture that stymies the growth and creativity of a lot of employees. If it's a smaller company, it's just a simple mindset and getting out of the way you used to do things and getting into something new.
So what do you see as some of the key ingredients for great leadership?
Well, that's a very wide open question. But as it applies to customer service, let's focus on that because that's what I do. I think a good leader does several things. Number one, they're very clear with their vision. I have walked into companies and I have seen, I've gone into boardrooms. I won't ask this question anymore. I'll ask somebody, hey, what's your CEO's vision? And they look at me like, why are you asking me that in front of all of my colleagues? I don't know what his vision is or her vision is. And it's so amazing to me that companies are out of alignment like that. So a good leader will provide a very crystal clear vision. They'll communicate that vision well. And when it comes to customer service, you know, what do you want that culture to be? And then communicate it. And once it's communicated, they will train their company to that culture. And a good leader, regardless of whether it's service or anything else, will define what it is that their vision is, they'll communicate it, and then they'll start to create ways in which people will act on that vision. And it's typically done through training. And it's important to recognize training isn't something that you did when somebody first came on, or maybe you do it once every 2 years. No, it's something you do all of the time to keep the vision and what's important right in front of everybody, keep it front of mind. So once it's trained, and this is a really cool one, I asked the CEO of a company what they felt their most important job was, and this is what he told me. It is to defend the culture. He created the culture, and now when he sees it going out of alignment, he needs to defend it. And then he also demonstrates it. Walt Disney did this, great leader. Walt Disney would walk through his theme parks and stoop down and pick up a piece of paper and throw it away. He actually called that stooping to excellence. And the reason he called it that is because he knew that everybody in the theme park who worked there, all of the cast members, which is what they call the employees at Disney, all of those cast members were watching Walt Disney walk through the park. And when they saw him walk by a piece of paper, if he walked by it without stooping down to pick it up, Walt Disney knew that he was giving everybody permission to do the same thing. So he wanted to demonstrate the way he wanted others to behave. And finally, when all of this works, celebrate it. Let people know how much you appreciate their good, hard work. And that's what good leaders do. They show appreciation.
Everybody on the team watches the leader for cues as to how to behave.
Exactly. And a miscue could destroy the culture.
Absolutely. What roadblocks do you see repeatedly in business?
Companies don't hire the right people to fit with the culture as well as the personality of a company. I think we can learn a lot from Zappos.com. And if you read Tony Hsieh's book, Delivering Happiness, I think is what it's called, or Happiness Delivered. Great book. And he talks about how he hires to this culture and the core competencies that every person who comes to work has to have. I think hiring right is really important. Some leaders have a do as I say, not as I do mentality. You know, I already talked about demonstrating what you want people to do. If you have that do as I say, not as I do mentality, you risk sending an incongruent message. So those are just a couple of things I think leadership and companies do wrong when it comes to running their organizations.
That's great. And can you give me an example of something you did that really catapulted your business forward?
Sure. I joined the National Speakers Association. Let me put a plug in for them.
Please.
I believe education is such an important part of whatever industry you're in. So I was in the speaking business. I started in 1983. Sometime around 1986 or 87, a guy introduced me to this idea of the Speakers Association. I had no idea what he was talking about. And he finally calls me up one day. He says, "Shep, I want you to come to a meeting." I said, "Okay, when is it?" And I went and I went, wow. And this was June of 1988. I'd been in business 5 years. You could do the math. I was about 28 years old. And I thought, wow, I have met the people that I want to hang with because these people are like me. They're doing the same thing. I can relate to them. I immediately went to the convention. It's now 20 some odd years later, almost 25, 26 years later, 27 years later. And I'm a member. I'm current president of the National Speakers Association. I can't believe that ever happened. But the point is this. I look at things that I can do. I look back on milestones in my career. That was definitely one of them. And there are a number of them. And then every so often, about every 5 years, I do this exercise. I say, what have I done in the last 5 to 10 years that I don't do anymore or that I do that I can repeat? And becoming a member of the National Speakers Association, getting all that education, hanging out was important. So I said, is there another organization that will give me some more business acumen, some you know, something I can use in my business? And I found another organization, the Entrepreneurs Organization. Back when I joined, it was called YEO, Young Entrepreneurs. I guess we're now just EO because we're not as young as we used to be, I guess. But we're a worldwide organization and they have events all over the world. And I've learned more about, you know, how to run a business totally different than a speaking business, because typically most of our members are really in a speaking practice. They're not in a speaking business. If they don't work that day, they don't get paid. I think that the Entrepreneurs Organization started to teach me about all types of issues, personnel issues, HR issues, leadership issues, but more importantly, it taught me to think like a business person. Look for opportunities to repeat your successes.
That's a great tip. So with that in mind, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're working on now that's really exciting?
I think one of the biggest things over the last couple of years that I've been developing and growing is my online virtual university. So couldn't do this back when I first started out. But today with the internet, I can take my content and I can actually create a virtual interactive program where somebody would, you know, buy a license, and companies basically buy licenses for all of their employees to sit down and spend time with me virtually interacting with them. It is a program that I actually create and produce in Las Vegas at Lightspeed VT. VT stands for virtual training. And the Lightspeed program allows me to take my content and I'll create questions. And based on your answers to those questions, I'll continue down a different path. And all of this is, it's recorded video that is interactive, and it's so you don't really watch it, you participate in it. It's got quizzes, there's workbooks, but it's very powerful. And we have clients that when they hire me, they go, what's next? How can we keep this going?
Now, you mentioned Bud Dietrich. I wonder if you could mention one other influencer that has been really pivotal in helping your career move forward.
Well, actually, I mentioned Bud, who is my mentor, who gave me great advice in the beginning. You know, I mentioned the National Speakers Association, who, that's not necessarily a person, but that group has had such great influence. My parents, very, very important. You know, jokingly, you remember that book that was out, Everything I Needed to Learn, I Learned in Kindergarten or something like that?
Yes.
Well, everything I needed to learn about customer service, I basically learned from my parents. It's the basics. You know, mentors and people that I admire, they're, I think, you know, I don't even have to have a personal relationship. I can study a company. I can study Amazon, Zappos, Nordstrom, and learn so much from them. And I internalize it. I put my own spin on it. And I'm able to be better at what I do as a result of learning from these companies. And these companies have shared their information. Companies like Disney, companies like Ace Hardware, they share their information so that others can be successful as well.
Which is really terrific. And that's a way of showing value.
Right. I mean, think about it. If I wanted to be better, Zappos now has a course that I can take. If I want to learn the way Disney does their magic when it comes to customer service and management, I can go to the Disney Institute and take their courses. They're willing to share their secrets, even with their competitors. That's how confident they are. And that's how good their programs are, because their competitors do, in fact, go to try and learn.
That's really a terrific lesson. We want to teach our competition how to try to be as good as we are?
Well, and it forces us to raise our bar, because if we're willing to share and let them catch up to us, then we better be on the cutting edge and be able to take it to another level.
Yeah, that's a great tip. It's a great tip. Shep, who do you know personally who's doing remarkable work?
Wow, there's an awful lot of people. You know, I just Well, I'll tell you who I love right now. I just went to a conference. The closing speaker was a gentleman named Sasha Strauss, a branding expert. This guy teaches both at UCLA and USC. On any given weekend, I don't know which sweatshirt he wears. But, you know, that's pretty powerful when both universities want you. And I think to myself, wow, the guy's doing great work. I listened to him speak. Not only was he a phenomenal speaker, but he also had a lot of great information that, you know, I felt that I could relate to and really use. He's doing great work. Small branding company, about 25, 30 employees. Just, you know, I believe he's on the cutting edge. A friend of mine, Dr. Jason Selk, talk about doing great things. He has this little simple formula he calls the relentless focus solution. Relentless on focusing on solutions when you're in your deepest, darkest places. If you get knocked down, how do you get up? You just simply ask yourself a simple question. What's the one thing I can do right now that's going to just make it even a little bit better? And focus on that one little solution. And a bunch of little wins are going to create a big win long term.
That's a great example.
So those are a couple of guys that I'm just really fascinated with. And then I haven't seen her yet, but I'm excited to see her in person, but I've watched her videos. Her name is Immaculée. Immaculée was in Rwanda, and her family basically perished in genocide. And terrible, terrible story. But she talks about forgiveness. And think about that. I'm blown away when somebody can do that to you, and then you can forgive them. And you talk about doing great things. I mean, that's a great thing. that's pretty amazing.
It's extraordinary, and I've actually been lucky to have a few guests who fall into that category on this show, and their stories are just remarkable. It's such an honor to be able to have people like that in the mix as part of this program. So, yeah, it's a great example. Shep, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
Sure. Just go to my website, which is www.hyken.com. And there you'll learn all about me, probably more than you want to know.
I don't think so. But anyway, Shep, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been customer service expert, professional speaker, and best-selling author, Shep Hyken. Shep, thank you again for joining us.
David, thanks for having me. It's been great.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.